All right, well, welcome back to this week's episode of the Electric Podcast, everyone. As usual, I'm Fred Lambert, your host, and I'm joined by Seth Wintraub. Seth is joining me from Alaska.
How's it going?
How is it up there, Seth?
It's beautiful.
It's going great. How about you?
I'm good.
Yeah, we can see that on the background.
Yeah,
you're there with your family for a week or so. Relaxing a little bit. Just we're taking you away from your vacation a little bit for this podcast. We appreciate it.
No problem. It's just a little lunchtime right now.
Yeah, you're always behind us right now. Plenty to talk about too on this week's podcast. Of course, the big news was Tesla and specifically Elon Musk. It appears to be his project very much so. The plan to take the company private. So that was a big bomb that came out this week. So we're going to discuss that a lot. Then a few other Tesla news. And a few other EV news too. We're gonna get into that, but very much the focus is gonna be taking Tesla private, which Elon announced earlier this week on Twitter. Very nonchalant way to announce such a big change for the company, which went private back in 2010. So the vast majority of Tesla followers right now, Tesla fans and EV enthusiasts, know Tesla as being a public company, and all that comes with it, which is, of course, the intention from the financial markets, financial publications, the quarterly reports. The big focus on quarterly reports is a big thing. But Elon is tired of it. He doesn't want it anymore. He doesn't want all that comes with it. And he wants to take it private at $420 per share. So he announced that once the stock was about at $350, so with a big upside. But the stocks went up and down since he announced that too. So a lot of changes there. And we had a lot of questions because literally there was like not even 10 words in his announcement, on his original tweet announced it. It was literally, I'm considering taking Tesla private at $420 per share, funding secured. That's it. So
and that last part is pretty important, right?
That the funding is secured, it's a big part, and it's the biggest question right now. So what does it mean? So do you have investor really to put the money there? But even there, we don't know exactly what the money is, because with the outstanding shares right now that Tesla has on the public market, at $420, that's worth over $70 billion. Of course, you don't really need to raise that much money because he aims for most investors to keep their shares. So you wouldn't need to convert that many shares. But what he's saying by funding secure is that he talked to people that have a lot of money, and he believes that the percentage of investors that's going to want to sell their shares at $420 when Tesla goes private, they're going to buy it. So that's the very basic principle of it. Of course, there's a lot of legals and financials, legalese.
And the index funds, though, the index funds can't keep their shares, right? Like,
It really depends, because most of the money is held by institutional investors who can easily decide to keep the shares. You have, of course, Elon himself is a big shareholder. He's probably the biggest one at 20%.
20%. So that's 20% of the $70 billion right there. That knocks off about 15 or so.
Mm-hmm. Then there are also the retail investors. But there's a lot to unpack here, because once he announced that, my main question was, because that could be basically a takeover too, because if there's one entity ready to buy all those shares that people want to sell at $420, that means that there's an entity willing to basically buy Tesla at $420. So that was my first question to Elon Musk. He says that he doesn't see anyone person, one shareholders becoming a controlling the vote after the transaction. So, but he says that based on another belief, which is that most investors are going to retain their shares at $420 per share. So that's a big if. Our first or early polling of investors so far shows that most people would be willing to keep their shares, but that's mainly retail investors.
That's also electric readers who are obviously big.
Yeah, that's a good point. the big funds, the big institutional investors, they might decide to just say see $420 and just we're going to take our profit on that. Because, I mean, at $420, a lot of people are making a lot of money. And that might be enough for a lot of funds. If you're looking to go liquid with your fund, you want more liquidity, that's a big opportunity here to go liquid if you're afraid for the market in general, not just Tesla in particular, but if you don't like what you're seeing right now in the market. So there are a lot of big ifs here. I also asked him, is that going to, with the change, is that going to result in maybe him stepping down as CEO, which is something that he's talked about in the past? He responded no. So that's if that was on your mind, you can be at ease. But following those this Twitter announcement and the exchange that we had with him on Twitter, he released an email that he sent to employees. So that had a lot more details, but it's more about his logic behind going private than actual plans to take private the company, which is quite complicated. And I mean, personally, the logic is very good. What he's looking at here is that he doesn't want to focus on the quarterly result anymore, which is something that you very much have to do if you're on the public market, because the whole market works on quarters. Secondly, there's also the focus on the stock price. So if there's not a public stock price anymore that fluctuates every day, a lot less focus for internal employees who are all shareholders. So that's all something that affects their own compensation. So employees wouldn't focus as much on that, even though they would remain shareholders and they would benefit from the share price increasing. But the share price won't increase as such a volatile way that it does right now.
Right. I guess the high level thing the email said was that we want to think long term. We don't want to be kind of a slave to the ups and downs of the market. The ups and downs of, like, you know, delivering on a quarterly basis. We want to deliver year over year and far out. So that's like the high level. And then the details are, you know, these certain things.
Well, the details are basically based on the SpaceX model, basically. Because right. he has a big private company right now that he's leading, SpaceX. So he sees all the advantage of it, and now he wants the same thing for Tesla.
But he doesn't want to merge the two companies, which other people.
No, so he made that clear. I don't know that was a concern because for bringing private, especially with such large shareholders that they have now. But he made that clear. So basically, the way that SpaceX operates as a private company is that if they have share, they have stock option that they give to their employees. And they raise money a lot like a public company does by issuing more shares, taking dilution and everything. But the way that they evaluate the stock price is with a third-party consulting company that evaluates their financial reports and come up with a stock price. And they do that every 6 months. And when they do that, they also take aside shares for investors and all shareholders to have the opportunity to vest their option or to sell their shares. So you can hold your shares and see them, not necessarily grow, but if so, grow every 6 months, and you have a new stock price to base that on. And if you decide to do so, you can sell some of your share to the company and get some money back. So that would be the way that if you remain shareholders, because his goal is also that current retail shareholders remain shareholders. But also for employees, that's a big thing. That's a very big thing.
So just briefly, where do you think the money's coming from? Like, what are your hunches? Is his kind of investment community that he's, you know, kind of made a lot of money for, like Draper, Jurvetson, Fisher Jurvetson groups? Or does he have like one like sovereign wealth fund, or what's your take?
Yeah, I don't know that that VCs would have the kind of money that you need to put toward a take private move. Of course, what was the most interesting thing about this in terms of who's putting the money is that the news came out right after we learned that the Saudis foreign wealth fund took a stake in Tesla evaluated between 3% and 5%. So less than 5% for sure, because if it was at 5%, they would have to disclose it officially to the SEC, and they didn't do that. So, but some serious sources at the Financial Times said, and the companies didn't want to confirm it, so looks like it's probably right, said that 3 to 5% was a new stake that they took recently in the company. Of course, like, then the rumor mill started, but the rumor mill went on two completely different sides. Some said that the Saudis are attempting a hostile takeover of Tesla, and that's why Elon responded with that, with taking an attempt at taking the company private. And the other side of the rumor mill says, no, it's actually Elon that went to the Saudis to try to secure the money to take the company private. I think the latter sounds more accurate, if any of them are true, which we don't know. But I doubt that the Saudis are attempting a hostile takeover of a $70 billion company, even though they're very rich. There's no doubt about it.
So this is where we don the tinfoil hat and say, well, maybe they're trying to destroy Tesla. They take it over because, you know, clearly if Tesla succeeds, oil will be less in demand. They're trying to take it over from a, you know, a hostile takeover and a hostile, you know, just running into the ground kind of thing.
Yeah. I think it's overblown. It's a fear that would be overblown in my opinion. But I can see where it's coming from, because there's nothing new about oil trying to put a stick in the wheel of electric vehicles. But that said, I mean, it would be so flagrant. I mean, there's no, the blowback would be huge at this point. And I think it's more about, if it's true, again, we don't know. We know that they took a stake for sure, but we don't know that that's what they're doing, that's where the money's coming from for the take private move. I think it's more about looking forward to the post-oil era, which they see coming too, and they won't prepare for it. That's more my view, especially now with a little more progressive government that is taking place with what's his name, Ben Salim, the new prince that is basically the new dictator there now. He's a young guy in his 30s, and he made a huge purge of the government recently to officially to take away corruption, but unofficially it looks like he's more taking away money from the richest families, who are basically his cousins, and so to bring the money back to the state, which goes to that very same found really that is investing now in Tesla. But I mean, there's certainly some pros and cons here, and the cons are, of course, do you want Tesla to be controlled, or not to be controlled, but the Saudis to have more control over Tesla, considering their background being heavily invested in oil and having a very poor history in terms of human rights and so on. I mean, it's not necessarily the best partner to have, maybe.
Are you saying that as a Canadian?
Yeah, well, I mean, I'm not the biggest fan of Justin Trudeau, who's the tapping on the head of the Saudis right now either. But he has some good points too. I mean, they have a bad history of human rights for sure. I mean, and when you're trying to give yourself a tap in the back because you let women drive right now, I mean, bravo, you let women drive. I mean, that's something that we've been doing for decades right now. It's not, anyway. So I see points on both sides, but and again, we don't know for sure that that's what's going on right now. But what for sure is going on is that Tesla is trying to move forward with that, and Elon Musk particularly. So that's the logic behind it. Focus on the long term, like you said. There's also a third aspect too, which is giving a big finger to the shorts, I think, because taking a stock private will mean that the short will have to cover the position and would have to cover the position at whatever the stock is trading right now, up to $420 per share, which would represent a major loss for the vast majority of the shorts who have been shorting the stock at a much lower price, really, since the stock have been going up. So that would maybe ruin a few person and a few founds that have been shorting Tesla would be very hurt. And Elon Musk's logic behind that, it's not necessarily to hoard them, but he sees a lot of the misinformation about Tesla, a lot of the bad press that Tesla is getting. He thinks that the shorts are behind that a lot, which I think is not completely false, though I don't think it's the only reason too. Like, I think Tesla has a part of the fault here, the way that they're being very combative with the media, Elon Musk included. And also, I mean, I think just the press sometimes is critical. It's not because of the shorts, but we also have seen a lot of money being. If you have a lot of money on Tesla going, or the Tesla stock price going down, of course, it makes sense that you try to bolster some bad news, some negative press about them.
Yeah, and so he sees that
removing
on.
The opportunity to short Tesla stock would come again.
Yeah, so we've actually reported on the Koch brothers funding. Mm-hmm. Press, you know, negative press about electric vehicles. So it's not just shorts, but it's the oil industry or the fossil fuel industry as well.
Yeah, yeah, that's a good point. So it's not just the shorts, but I'm sure I'm ready to concede that they are part of the problem on that misinformation front too. I just don't know how much of an issue. So yeah, it could have a good impact for Tesla if you put that aside. But you're also gonna piss off a lot of people that are just gonna lose a ton of money on it, and it might linger their misinformation campaign from that after losing money. So I don't know. And so far, I mean, the shorts are not that impressed by that, because it would be like. The perfect weapon against the short. I mean, you go private, you make them cover, and that's it. So right now, and at $420 per share. So right now, it's whether or not you believe that Elon Musk is going to do it, that Tesla is going to do it. And the market is not really impressed. I mean, it went up at the beginning when he announced it, but throughout the week, it settled down to about the same level that it was before he announced it. So nothing really crazy here. Excuse me. Of course, a few other factors that play into that, mainly the SEC. A lot of reports coming out that Tesla is being investigated by being probed by the SEC over the way that they disclosed that plan to go private. Again, at the beginning, we talked about how he announced it on Twitter, which is not the standard way to do that. But at the same time, the SEC has had concern in the past about Elon Musk disclosing important market-moving information through Twitter, and they basically agreed that it was okay, because it's a very efficient way to disseminate information. And Tesla also, in their early financial disclosures, they told investors that they're going to release information through that. So, I mean, I very much doubt that anything bad against Musk or Tesla is going to come out of those probes.
Yeah.
But, of course, the shorts are hammering it like crazy, because it's a way out for them.
Yeah. So, also, it's not like he just did that. You know, he woke up and he decided to do that. He had been discussing it with the board, we found out later, in the week prior to the tweet. So, it's not like he just came up with the idea and tweeted it out. It was...
Yeah, well, the timing was the tweet and after the board disclosure. Well, there was three things that Tesla did. Elon Musk through Twitter. Then there was the email that we just discussed that he sent to employees, but Tesla released the email at the same time. Then, yes, the board sent out a press release the next day saying that, like you said, Elon Musk approached them a week prior, disclosing his plan to try to take Tesla private. And now what we've learned since then is that the board is moving forward with their evaluation of the proposals and seeking more information from Elon about the plan and the funding, which is not exactly clear. So that's where we're missing details right now again, is what's going to be the actual proposal that, because it has to go through a shareholder vote. So the shareholders have to vote on something that is very much clear. Because I think the general plan, if you just say to the shareholders, we're going to take Tesla private, then you show them all the points that Musk made in that email. I think most shareholders are just, because if you're already a Tesla shareholders, you're already a Tesla fan to some level and whatnot. So I think most of them would go on board with that, especially at 420 a share. So that's set out a new bottom valuation at Tesla with the current rate that the company is going and everything. So very attractive proposal, but then you need all the details. So where the money is coming from? Do you have any expectation? Did you make any studies, research about what would be the conversion rate to investors exiting their position at 420? So if it's just I don't know, like 10 billion worth of shares that end up being sold, maybe that's attracting for attractive for more exposed people. If it's 20, if it's 25, ooh, no. So who's getting that 20, 25? One of the speculation that I heard was that Elon was looking to get a lot of different new investors to convert it to buy the shares at 420 for those that want to sell. So if you're able to split that between different funds. And we know that he's not in short supply of rich friends. We are in the comment right now. I just saw Larry, so I assume that's Larry Page, Google co-founder, who's also very rich. So yeah, someone like that, Peter Thiel. I think he's still a friend with Elon. I mean, there's a lot of very rich people that could be interested in taking a bigger stake in Tesla, and that would be a great opportunity to do it, I think. Do you have anyone that comes in mindset?
Well, I mean, both Google founders. Google was rumored to be interested in Tesla. There's always the Apple question, you know, if Apple wanted to take it. Although, you know, I don't see Apple doing that ever.
No, me neither.
Let's see. I mean, there's always the people in the valley. Larry Ellison, quite rich. Maybe, definitely not Bezos.
No, right.
So, you know, whatever. There's plenty of rich people around.
Yeah, also, you can have also big funds like SoftBank would take big investment like that all the time.
Oh, yeah, Tencent in China. So there's
Tencent in China, too. Good point. Already a 5% stake in Tesla would make sense to for them if they want to take a 5% more or something. Of course, they had the 5% stake at a much lower price than it would be, but still. So right now, just to close it on the going private proposal, I think the chance that of it happening are very high right now. I think it's something that Elon wants. I think it's something it makes sense. Elon sees how SpaceX is doing well right now under that same model, and it's doing well because SpaceX is profitable. And he's very confident that Tesla is going to be profitable during this second half of 2018. So he sees that now it's profitable, it would make sense for him to go back private, because he got what he wanted from the public market. He got billions and billions of dollars out of the public market, and shareholders got billions and billions of dollars of returns too. If they exit at 420, or if they decide to keep the stock private at 420, whatever. So I think it makes a lot of sense. I think it's going to happen, really. That's my prediction.
Yeah, I agree. I think it's more likely than not to happen. I don't know if the 420, I mean, I think he might have just thrown that number kind of out there. I don't know if he's locked into that. Or
well, if he talked to an investor about it, it had to be a number there.
Right,
because he had to win. If he said that the funding is secure, so because he went to an investor, he said, "Are you willing to buy the stock at 420 if we take the company private?"
Right.
So there had to be a number being thrown around.
That's true. I just.
But the thing though is that if the stock go over 420 by the time it locks in, then it's a problem though.
Right. Yeah, it's kind of weird that he called that out so early, rather than just saying going public, but. He's got to get.
Yeah, I mean, the way that Tesla announced stuff sometimes is not the best. We know that already, and that this is clearly another example of that.
Yeah, we'll see.
Yeah, quickly on the Model 3 this week. Big news that Model 3 Performance version is apparently coming to Canada relatively soon. How do we know that? It's because some people started getting their notice that the vehicle is going to production.
You know anyone?
And by some people, I mean me. So I got contacted by Tesla's internal sales team this week saying that my car is planning to go on production basically right now because it's going to roll off the line sometime next week. I think it's the 13 that they gave me that it's going to roll off on production. And then from there, it's going to make its way to Montreal. Though, of course, that takes some time. So they're planning for early September delivery. So if it's going to be a few weeks in transit, then I should get the delivery. I don't have a fixed delivery date yet. I don't even have a VIN number. They're saying that I'm going to get that in the next few weeks, and I'm going to get a solid delivery date in the next few weeks. But they're planning right now for early September because my car should come out the line next week. So it should be among the first performance Model 3 in Canada, and it should launch the Model 3 performance delivery in Canada. It also launched the production of the Obsidian Black. Haven't been any Obsidian Black delivered until unless like today or in the very last few days, because they just started production, and my car is Obsidian Black too. So it looks like they're gonna do a batch of Obsidian Black, and so you're gonna see a few deliveries in the U.S. way before I get my car anyway. But if it's a color that you like, you're gonna see a few Performance Model 3 have it fairly soon. And Tesla also released a cool video of the robot, the Model 3 paint robot, when they started production of that. Speaking of the Model 3 performance, we got more data about the acceleration of the car from real-world tests from early owners. And quite a few tests are getting a faster 0 to 60 time than Tesla advertised, which is 3.5 seconds. We got anything from 3.1 to 3.6, but the most consistent results and those with a sort of reliable devices like a V-Box are getting mostly 3.3 seconds. So it looks like Tesla is being conservative with the 3.5, and you can get 3.3 out of it. So that's exciting. We got the quarter mile number too, which was 11.8, which is also insanely fast. I mean, no one's going to complain about that, I think. I also had another conversation with Elon on Twitter this week, other than the going private. We talked a little bit about the plans for the Autopilot hardware 3.0. Elon tweeted an image of a chart by Alex Friedman from MIT Research showing all the different regeneration of Autopilot that have been delivered. So like 49,000 first no Autopilot, just over 100,000 cars with Autopilot Gen 1, and now pretty much over 200,000 cars with Autopilot 2.0 and up. So of course we know that there's also a 2.5, which is basically just a new onboard computer for the Autopilot. Very similar hardware otherwise to the Autopilot 2.0. But now we know, of course, we discussed that last week. The Autopilot 3.0 is coming, which involves a new computer with the custom design chip that Tesla has developed especially to run a computer vision neural net, which is powering, of course, Tesla's latest version of Autopilot software. And we got some clarification about it. First of all, I asked him about the timing, because when they announced it last week, they just said next year. Now Elon said probably 4 to 6 months. So looks like it could be this year, but Elon time.
Yeah, Elon not.
Yeah, so probably next year still holds up if you want to plan for it. Also, I asked him about the plan for the retrofit to be what's going to be the cost, because Tesla has been talking about doing that for free, but they didn't clarify that when they announced the hardware. So Elon said that those who order full self-driving get the upgrade at no cost, and he said it isn't needed for the hands of the pilot. So that's something that a lot of readers thought was going to happen, and makes a lot of sense. Basically, what he's saying is that Tesla can deliver all the promised feature on their enhanced autopilot with the current hardware. So if you just order enhanced autopilot, you don't need the hardware, so you won't get it the hardware for free. But if you order the self-driving feature, which would require the new hardware in order to get to full level 5 autonomous driving, then you get it, well, not really for free, because you have to pay for the actual software behind it, which costs either $3,000 or $5,000, between $3,000 and $5,000, depending on when you order it. So if you ordered it right when you before taking delivery, it was $3,000. Then if you order it over the air after that, it was $4,000. But in June, they increased it to $5,000. And I know a few people felt cheated about that, because you might have ordered a car without fully self-driving, thinking you're just going to have to pay $4,000 if Tesla ever deliver the software for the feature. But now it's showing at $5,000 in your account. I reached out to Tesla a few times about that, and they are aware of the problem, and they know it doesn't make sense. So it should be $4,000 for those people over the air. It just looks like they haven't figured out how to separate the two things, that for new orders with $5,000 and for old orders for $4,000. But they are aware of it, and they're going to keep us updated, they said. So makes sense.
So in the long term, it will be $4,000 for people who bought with the idea that they could upgrade with $4,000.
Yeah, basically anyone who ordered before June is my understanding. So even if you didn't order with the fully self-driving thing, you should still be able to get the package for $4,000. So same thing for Model 3. If you did the same, I know you're basically in that group, because you have a Model 3 and a Model X, both with Autopilot 2.0.
Yep.
And you have an enhanced autopilot on one and no autopilot at all on either. So basically, if you would want the new computer on your Model X, you would have to pay $4,000. You'd get the new full-size self-driving package, and you will get a computer. As for your Model 3, you could also get the update if you wanted to, but you would have to pay $6,000 for an enhanced autopilot first, and then $4,000 for fully self-driving. So you had $10,000 to get the new computer and to get all the autopilot feature and the one to come with fully self-driving in the future.
Yeah, it's kind of expensive.
It certainly is.
Also, the Model 3 is quite fun to drive. So
yeah,
I think we're going to have one car with and one car without. Maybe, you know, once the Tesla network's up and running, and you know, the car can pay for itself.
And it'll make exactly. Sense. Yeah, it only makes sense if you believe that Tesla can deliver on the fully self-driving thing with the Tesla network and everything. If everything that is true, I mean, I think a lot of people will just pony up the $10,000 or the $4,000 or the $5,000, whatever the situation is for your current order.
Mm-hmm.
I think it makes a lot of sense. Speaking of autopilot trials, for the longer electric readers, you know about the autopilot trials that Tesla did back in 2016. So basically, if you don't have autopilot, so you're going to have it probably on your Model 3 set.
Yep.
In the next day or so. The Model 3 is back home now, So a few thousand miles away, but whatever. Basically, Tesla enable the software on your car for autopilot if you didn't order it when you took delivery of the car. You have it for free for 2 weeks. And during those 2 weeks, or after those 2 weeks, you can decide to pay for it, like we just explained, and you get it. So it's basically a way to get people to order the autopilot. And they do that just before they're supposed to release the version 9, which, of course, includes some improvement to the current features and new features like the on-ramp to off-ramp enhanced autopilot feature, which a lot of people are waiting for, because it should basically make the vehicle autonomous on the highway. Basically, we will have to check that first and make sure it works, but that's what Tesla is saying. Key fob. Yeah, we also learned this week that Tesla filed with the FCC for a new key fob. the speculation is that the key fob would be for the Model 3, which doesn't have a key fob, which we asked Tesla about, and they refused to comment, which led me to believe that it would make sense that it's for the Model 3. So people have been complaining that they have to use their key card because the Bluetooth doesn't always work with the phone.
Yeah, I've had that specific issue. It is kind of
annoying. That with a specific phone or with all phone?
So it works a little bit more reliably with the iPhone.
That's what I've heard too.
Yeah, the Android, and I have a Google Pixel too, and sometimes it's off and you have to go. It's a relatively easy fix. You just go turn on airplane mode and turn it off and it starts. But it's like, you know, you don't want to be fumbling around with your phone when you just want to get in your car and start it up.
Yeah.
So
yeah, because the goal is to get passive entry like you get with a key fob on your Model S and X. So the only way to get that with the Model 3 is with the phone, because with the key card you actually have to place it on the B pillar.
The cup holder as well.
Yeah, and put in a cup holder after that to keep it started. So yeah, it's about convenience, and probably the key fob it would be the easiest way. And so that might become an option in the near future for Tesla. We're going to know for sure in a month or so, because Tesla filed for confidential treatment on that filing for the key fob. But it looks very likely. Though that doesn't give us the timing. I mean, the 1 month is for the confidential thing, and that was going to release all the information about the key fob, including most likely that it works with the Model 3. So we're going to get back to you about that in the next month or so. Moving on from Tesla, though it's basically the Tesla of e-bikes, we tested out the Surron electric bicycle this week. And calling it the bicycle is very much pushing it, because even though it has pedals or has the option to put pedals on it, it's pretty much a motorcycle at this point. It's a very cool bike. It's made in China, but it's very, very well designed. And it's just now making its way to North America, being imported by a company back in California called Luna Cycles. They work with the company in China to make it fit for the North American market. And they started deliveries in the last few months.
What did you pay for?
I paid about, the base price is $3,500 US. But if you had the pedals kit, I think it's another $200 or so. And you have a few other options to work. Like I just ordered a new controller for it, a new motor controller. And that's like $500. It's a lot of money.
Why did you get a new controller?
I got a new controller because they designed a new one for it, which increased the power output by 25%.
Oh, wow.
And as you know, it's already a crazy power output. It increased the top speed by 10%, and it's already a crazy top speed of 50 miles per hour, 80 kilometers an hour. And it also has regen on the motor. Oh, nice. You have regenerative braking and motor. So I mean, it's a big it's $500. But if I ship back my current motor controller that I have on it, which works just fine, by the way, I could just keep it. And I did a very positive review of the bike with the current motor controller. If I ship it back, they give me $200 back, so it would be like $300 upgrade with the new controller. So I'm going to look into that and see if it makes sense for me to just ship it back, because I had some issue getting the bike shipped too.
Right.
But yeah, for the bike itself, I mean, the design is very awesome, because they built a frame, a all aluminum diecast frame for it that is very much minimal, but it feels very solid. So it looks well made. You see the welds a lot on it, but it's just cosmetic. It's just the aesthetic of the look. It's not. It's still very solid, and there's no body panels at all. So all you see that it's solid, that you don't see through it, is because it's components of the powertrain. So the whole battery pack, you have a big 2 kilowatt hour battery pack made of 18650 Panasonic cells, so similar to what Tesla uses in the Model S and X, same format from Panasonic, just probably not the exact same chemistry. You see also the electric motors, motor, just one, which is made by Surron, so they make their own electric motor, a crazy one, fairly compact for 6 kilowatts of output. Potential for 6 kilowatts of output, I think, like a peak motor. I think right now you can get like 5.4, something like that, But with the new controller, I should be able to push it closer to the 6 kilowatt peak capacity, which is going to be pretty insane because already right now it's very fast. So you have two modes. You have sports mode and you have eco mode. Eco mode limits it to 3 kilowatts, but you put it to sports mode and you launch from it. It's pretty insane. I put a video on it on our YouTube channel if you guys want to check it out. It's very fun. It's also using motorbike tires. So because the bike overall ends up at about 110 pounds. So for a bicycle, it's very heavy. For a motorcycle, it's very light though, because for a dirt bike of that size, you're going to be closer to 200 pounds normally. So with true motorbike tires, it's going to hold up. I mean, it's not going to wear that much since it's not going to be that heavy for it. So that's great for it. Same thing for the chain. You have a 420 chain, so pretty heavy chains, very heavy for a bike, but light for a motorcycle. So again, with living it between those space, it's very good. Just a very well done bike for the price. I mean, I don't think for $3,500 you're gonna find anything close to it.
No, my question though, I mean, this seems like an amazing thing, but there's not many, like a lot of people don't have like dirt roads off of their house, and you know, putting this in your car is kind of rough. You think there's a possibility they can make a street legal version of this?
They already make one in Europe. They have one for the European market that you can you can license it as a scooter or moped, or I don't know exactly per market, but it's not an electric bike there. It's considered a scooter or moped or whatever.
I mean, this thing goes highway speeds almost. So
yeah,
I wonder if they could tweak it just a little bit more. It sounds like the new controller will get it over 55 miles per hour. I wonder if there's a possibility that they could go up against Zero and the other electric bike makers with something like this. Additionally, I saw a YouTube video of Suron going up against the base model Zero, and I think it fared pretty well, although I think the rider was a lot lighter. So I think this is a great opportunity. You can make a much lighter bike fairly inexpensively. The cost of the batteries, you only have 2 kilowatts, so it's not something insane. What is a typical Zero have inside? Is it like 10 kilowatts or 8 kilowatt hours?
I think it starts at around 8 and it goes up to 12 or even maybe 14 now. But I wouldn't compare it as much to the Zero as to the Alto Motors Redshift.
Right.
I think that would make a little bit more sense. Sort of a motocross bike, which uses 6 kilowatt hour battery pack.
Okay. So 3 times.
So
then.
3 times, but it's also 4 times the price, I think.
Right.
So big difference there. And it's much heavier, too. So it's 6 kilowatt, but it's over 200 pounds, a base Alto Motors Redshift motorcycle. So, at 100 pounds, of course, like you said, the weight of the rider has an effect too. But this thing could get up to 50 miles of range easily, which right now, again, it's for dirt roads based on how you can license it right now. So, the range is not as important as like how long can you push the bike. And it looks like you can push that bike for hours of fun during an afternoon or something like that. So it's not really an issue, I think, the battery pack at this point. And you can get it charged up in like 3 hours on 120 volts. So not much of an issue, really.
Yeah.
In terms of getting it street legal, they just managed to did it in California. So in California, they managed to get one. So there's a whole process, of course, to make it happen. So you don't just buy the bike from Lunacycle and get it. There's a process to be done. But they figured it out in California. It can be done. They figured it out in Europe based on you have to buy a specific model directly from China. But it's still a possibility. And right now in Canada, I talked to the Canadian representative for Lunacycle yesterday, and he said that they're looking into it too. So they're looking to make it happen in Canada. If you want to make it, it's probably going to be like an artisanal scooter license that you can get to get it plated and everything. So you're going to have side mirrors, you're going to have brake lights, some reflectors. So there's going to be some mods to make it happen, but it's certainly not impossible.
Sounds exciting. And did you try the pedals at all?
Yeah, I mean, once I first got the bike, I just put the pegs on, and I think it's a lot more fun to have the pegs on. But then I left the bike at my parents', and my dad started using it, and he put the pedals on because, I mean, if you want to be on the road, it makes more sense to have the pedals on just to looks more like an electric bike.
I don't think anybody's mistaking that for electric. But go ahead.
I mean, we're being optimistic here. Yeah. And he put the pedals on. But once I tried the bike again, so he said that there was some torque. You can add some torque to it. But once I tried it again, it didn't work. So I think we need to reinstall the pedals in another way to make it contribute to the torque. But to get the pedal assist, basically. But right now, they're just decorative, basically.
Right.
but, I mean, a 100-pound bike, pedaling on it, it's not fun at all. If you're really just going off-road, I suggest just putting the pegs, which takes a minute, and it's going to be a more comfortable ride than having your feet, like, spread apart on pedals. But either way, it's a crazy fun ride because the throttle response... Sorry?
No, those tires aren't very efficient for pedaling either.
Yeah, no, it's too big. It's too large the frame of it for it. Though, well, it's not that bad either though. I thought it would be worse when I tried it. I was pleasantly surprised. Anyway, for the ride experience, with you have a 8-inch travel on the rear truck, massive travel on the front fork. Very comfortable ride, and the throttle response is just crazy. Well, it's always with the instant torque of an electric motor, it's always fun. But when you're on a bike too, very, very enjoyable. And the sound too, the whining sound of the motor is great. It's fun to hear. So I've so far just mostly ridden it on dirt roads. But I bought the bike myself. That wasn't a review unit from Luna Cycle at all. So I'm going to try it a lot more and try it on tougher terrain, off-road and everything. And we're going to come back with a long-term review, see how the bike holds up, and maybe a more fun video with off-road footage and everything. That should be more fun.
That'll be interesting.
Yep. Moving on, a quick note about the Hyundai Kona Electric. The electric version of the Kona is finally being delivered outside of South Korea. Hyundai has made about 2,000 of them last month, 1,000 for a domestic market, and they shipped out 1,000 more. And they started arriving, of course, in Norway, which is often the first market that all electric vehicles end up in. One boatload of 100 cars were unloaded this week, and the first customers are now getting their cars, which is pretty great because we think it's going to have a big impact in the lower range of the market, since it starts about the equivalent, at least in Europe right now, 40,000 US, the equivalent of. And also this week, they just released the pricing in a bunch of other European markets. We've seen Belgium, we've seen France, we've seen Spain. So if you're in Europe right now, check it out if it's something that works for you. Mostly, I think the long range version is in production right now, which has a 64 kilowatt hour battery pack for almost 300 miles of range on the world standard, I think. So maybe a little bit optimistic, maybe closer to 250 would make sense, but for $40,000 it would make sense for a lot of people. Of course, don't be surprised, it's a small car. I mean, they're calling it a CUV, a compact utility vehicle, but it's basically bold TV size. Still cool though.
Yeah, and Hyundai does quite well at getting good mileage out of the kilowatt hours. The Hyundai Ioniq is still the champ in terms of miles per kilowatt hour, and this one does pretty well so far that we can tell, off of 64 mm-hmm. kilowatts. Also, it's, you know, kind of comparable in size to the Jaguar. It's a little bit shorter, I believe, but you know, the Jaguar I-Pace is very car-like besides its, you know, high ride height. Interior wise, it's more like a car than a SUV.
And this, yeah, CUV, the shape too is just it's the shape of a sedan, basically, on higher suspension.
Right.
Although it's not competing with the Jaguar in any way, for sure.
$40,000 difference or $30,000 difference price-wise.
Yeah, and you see the difference in the car, too.
Yeah, that's the other thing. You know, if you've driven a Hyundai, you know how it rides. It's not typically very smooth. It's very Prius-like. I imagine this will be very similar.
Yeah. Still, it's going to be very popular. They're claiming 20,000 reservations just in Norway alone. With other markets, I think it's going to be crazy, which is unfortunate because it looks like they're going to limit the production a lot. They were talking about fewer than 30,000 units per year. So it looks like it's going to be production constrained for a long time unless they decide to increase that. But from historical experience with the Ioniq, which is also very production limited, it looks like it's not in Hyundai's plans right now. Though they could prove us wrong, and please do, because more EVs is better for everyone.
Yeah, and the Kia Niro is also coming on the market soon.
Yeah, which is basically the same car with a Kia badge on it. Speaking of electric cars for everyone, Ampol, which is a stealth company, a stealth EV charging company, just got a big investment led by none other than oil giant Shell, the Dutch-British oil company. And they led an investment of $31 million in this first Series A for the startup, which is still very much in stealth mode. But they claim to be, I'm quoting, building a scalable solution for charging electric vehicles. I'm not reading the right thing right now. That was his comment. Never mind. Basically, the way that they're talking about it is that it's a solution that sort of off grid that can charge electric vehicles in minutes. But we looked into it a little bit more, and someone sent us some filing with cars that they did, and it sounds like it's more an autonomous battery swap technology that they're working on.
Right, so that's so, just a little bit like what Tesla was doing earlier, and a company called
Better Place,
Israeli company, was doing something similar. So maybe the time has come for that.
Yeah, I mean, if you look at the history of a battery swap, you'd say that it's a failure because, like you said, Better Place went bankrupt. Then Tesla didn't really work out with the one station that they opened up in California. But yeah, the timing was bad. I mean, there weren't as many cars, at least for Better Place, because Better Place didn't even have its own fleet of vehicles, so they were dependent on being compatible with a bunch of other automakers they weren't automakers themselves.
Mostly, Renault.
Yeah, so it's a very tough business. Now there are a lot more EVs on the road, so maybe it's going to be easier for them. We don't know. At least now they have $31 million in the bank, some of it from oil money. So, we'll see how it goes. Also, some news from Audi this week. They invited us to the unveiling of the e-tron Quattro electric SUVs. That's going to be next month in September in San Francisco. So we're going to see the production cars, and we're going to learn all the details about it. And we're going to get that back to you as soon as possible. But in the meantime, they've been just trickling down some bits and pieces of information over the last few months. This week, it was about the regen braking capacity of the car, which they tested at Pikes Peak. Hill, that's where they do the famous hill climb competition that VW won with their custom cars earlier this year. And they say that the regen alone is responsible for 30% of the range of the Audi e-tron. So the efficiency of the regen system contributes a lot to the range of the car. They basically say that in perfect condition, they are able to get 220 kilowatts back into the battery at a rate of 220, I should say. And so in perfect condition, it's virtually adding a kilometers of range for a kilometers of travel downhill.
I mean, it depends on the level. But
the slope, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, if you're hitting 220 kilowatts, that's slowing down a very big car very quickly. Correct. You know, for instance, the Chevy Bolt maxes out at 70 kilowatts. So you're talking about three times the Chevy Bolt, and the Chevy Bolt like slows you down really quickly, like really quickly. So I wonder, I mean, I guess this thing may weigh double what the Bolt does at most. So you're still looking at a much quicker slowdown. I don't think 220 is very realistic unless you live on top of a mountain and just go straight downhill. I don't think many roads are built like that. So
yeah, you need a steep slope for sure, which is probably what they had at Pikes Peak.
Right.
But yeah, you just mentioned the Bolt EV, which has a few different ways to get the regen on. So you have two different modes. Then you have the paddles, they call it.
Mm-hmm.
The paddles. Yep. Audi described its own system, which is very similar because they have two different modes. And they also talked about a paddle. So it looks like it's very, very similar to what you experience with the boat. They also talked about one pedal driving. So at the highest mode, you should be able to drive with just one pedal, which is pretty cool. Then we know that the Nissan Leaf now has that too. The Bolt also, you could technically drive with just one pedal by using just the accelerator and losing the regen and the paddle to stop completely. Pretty cool stuff. They released a bunch of very cool image also, if you look at Electrek, with the side mirrors right now that are not mirrors but are cameras. I'm very looking forward to see where they are, because they say they want to release that in the production version. It's just going to be dependent of where you're able to, based on the regulation on the market. In the U.S., it doesn't seem possible right now.
Yes.
They did those tests in the U.S.
So they had an actual e-tron at the Formula E event in Brooklyn, and mm-hmm. that one was the first I've seen with the rear view mirrors. So that doesn't bode well for what's coming to the U.S.
Yeah, they've specified that it's an option where it's possible. So I don't think it's going to be possible in the U.S.
Right.
But I think it's already in Japan, and maybe in Europe they're going to be a little bit more forward thinking about that.
Yeah,
I mean, it makes a lot of sense. I mean, if it works, if the camera technology works, it's reliable, which most of the time it is with the cameras, I say go for it.
Yeah, and you know, obviously the Tesla Model X had that in its original beta form. The idea is that, you know, obviously it's way more efficient, actually surprisingly efficient, more efficient in cutting through the air with a small camera than a big rear view. And theoretically, you could do a lot more with the camera and the video screen than you can with the traditional rear view mirror.
Yeah, you could actually improve security if you see it better. And in terms of the efficiency that you just discussed, for the Model X, Tesla evaluated it, I think, as much as 5%. So it's a big difference, 5% just from mirrors. You improve your aero efficiency by 10%. By 5%, it's huge. Lastly, we're going to discuss quickly Nikola Motors. We talked about them in the past for a lot of different reasons, but this week is because they secured $100 million, which is a pretty penny. And the goal with it is to bring to market their electric hydrogen fuel cell truck. So that's how Nikola Motors first came to our attention, because they announced an electric semi truck. But there was a lot of confusion in the media at first how they announced it. People thought that it was like a battery electric truck, and it does have a big battery in it, I think over 200 kilowatt hours, but it's mainly a hydrogen fuel cell truck. So they require hydrogen to go into the fuel cells in order to create electricity, which powers their electric motor. So it's an electric truck, but it's powered by batteries that gets charged through a plug and the fuel cells with hydrogen. And they have very, very ambitious plans about it, because the problem with hydrogen trucks, a lot like battery electric trucks, was the infrastructure to recharge those trucks. The big difference, though, is that there's already a big electric infrastructure pretty much everywhere in the world where trucks operate. So making charging stations for trucks is a lot easier with battery electric trucks. For hydrogen, not only you have to deploy the refueling architecture, you have to also deploy the entire hydrogen producing infrastructure behind it, because there's already hydrogen production, but it's very fragmented. It's also very much linked to fossil fuel production. So if you want to make it clean, you have to do it through electrolysis with renewable energy. So it's a lot of infrastructure deployment, which is going to cost a lot of money. But Nikola Motors says they are up for it, and they want to move to Arizona because they're based in Utah right now. They want to move to Arizona, make their headquarters there, make a manufacturing facility there, and produce their first electric truck, the Nikola 1 and the Nikola 2 that they unveiled a few years ago. And they want to make an entire network of hydrogen fuel stations all around North America, starting with 14 by 2021. They want to ramp that up, I think, to 700 or so in the next few years.
They just spent biggest all fan. $100 million right there.
Yeah. $100 million is going to be good for maybe a small, very small factory and headquarters. It's hundreds and hundreds of million for the fuel station. So we're not the biggest fan of that. If hydrogen fuel cells work for vehicles, it's gonna be in trucks. That I can agree with.
I agree with that too.
For passenger cars, it doesn't make sense at all. Battery electric vehicles, I've already surpassed them in capacity and price and efficiency and everything, basically, by a lot. I think, though, the problem with the trucks is that I think the same is going to happen over time, especially with what we're seeing right now Tesla doing with the Tesla Semi. Even though technically you can get more range right now with the hydrogen truck, I think the battery electric truck is going to catch up by the time hydrogen trucks hit the market. I mean, they're talking about 2021 right now. By next year, you're supposed to have the Tesla Semi with the current 600 miles of range or so that they are aiming for right now. With all the batteries improve over time, 2021, 2022, I don't see it happening. And of course, the entire efficiency supply chain of a battery electric truck makes a lot more sense, because you can recharge it with a renewable energy directly instead of going to renewable energy, hydrogen, then move the hydrogen to the refueling station, then refuel the trucks with the refueling station. It's a very much less efficient supply chain than the potential for electric trucks.
Yeah.
And the other big thing too, of course, it's Nikola Motors. I lost a lot of credibility in my eyes and in a lot of people's eyes, I think, earlier this year when they sued Tesla over the design of the Tesla Semi, claiming that Tesla infringed on their design patents, not technology patents, but design patents, saying that they basically copied the Tesla Semi truck. That Tesla copied the Nikola 1 truck for the design of the Tesla Semi truck. And they are suing them for millions of dollars over it and whatnot. You can go back to our article about that. You know, we broke it down and basically it makes no sense. There's clearly not any copying here. But it basically amounts to patent trolling. That's what they're doing. That's what I see them doing with that. So I think they're losing a lot of credibility by doing that instead of focusing on their own technology. But at the same time, When I tried the electric UTV, which is a fully electric UTV that Nikola is developing, I was very impressed by their technology, because they managed to fit 110 kilowatt hour, I think, battery pack inside a small UTV, which has insane performance. It's very quick and a great suspension too, that can handle pretty much everything off-road. I was very impressed by the machine that they developed for that. So I'm sort of torn between they are able to come up with great technology, but then they have that unrealistic hydrogen fuel cell truck plan, in my opinion, and then they have also that stupid lawsuit against Tesla. So I don't know.
Stick with the UTVs.
Yeah, I mean, it's a different division for them too. It's their Nikola Motorsport instead of Nikola Motors. So mm-hmm. I don't know. Maybe if they split up the company and I can be a fan of Nikola Motorsport and just stop reporting on the Nikola Motors.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Do you think battery swap would be better than hydrogen?
I think battery technology is improving so fast that I see just charging making it work. But battery swap can work too. We discussed about Lion Electric here in Quebec. We're also working on electric trucks, battery electric trucks, and they are betting on battery swap too, because they say if you have a commercial fleet, then it makes more sense to. And Tesla also acknowledged that battery swap doesn't really work for individual customers, but for commercial customers with fleet, they can own basically more battery packs. Then they have vehicles, so they can charge them once. They can charge a pack and still have the vehicle going with another pack or multiple packs or whatever. So it makes a lot more sense because you can manage your own pack. You can sell basically a swapping station or whatnot. Lion is doing it a lot more simple. You can remove the pack directly from the truck with a lift. You just need a lift. So a forklift, so that's pretty smart. And their trucks have multiple packs in them, so you can just remove one pack, have it charge it, and have the truck run with one pack and whatever. So there's a lot of possibility there, I think. But either way, if it's with charging or if it's with battery swap, I think that battery electric trucks are gonna win over hydrogen trucks. But that's pretty much it, everyone, for this week's episode. So I hope you enjoyed that. And thanks to our Patreon supporter at patreon.com/electrek. And thanks a lot for our subscriber. You can subscribe to YouTube for the podcast every week, and also our other video contents like our review of the Surround that we just discussed. And we're going to come up with more video content for you guys. Also, if you're listening audio only on your podcast app, we appreciate you a lot. And you can subscribe to those on iTunes, on Google Play, and everybody else. Thanks a lot. We're going to see you next week.